Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is it. The time has come.
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
Push him down.
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night.
With Adam Catterall and Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that.
On Talk Sport.
Welcome to the Fight Night podcast from Talk Sport. I'm Adam Catterall. Pleasure, as always, to be in your company. Bit of housekeeping, please subscribe to this. We are here every single week bringing you the very best in boxing conversation and the biggest named guests. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and you can also do it via the TalkSport website, TalkSport.com if you need Android feeds. This week is absolutely massive for boxing as the unified heavyweight champion of the world, Anthony Joshua, takes on the former undisputed cruiserweight champion of the world, Alexander Usyk. It's all going down at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. This podcast has got a ton of guests. Not only talking about that, but talking about stuff that they're getting up to as well. But we're going to start with that monster fight. Yeah? Okay, let's get stuck in. You're also going to hear from AJ and Usyk as part of our preview. The first half an hour, we're going to keep it all positive and we're going to be keeping our eyes and ears right across what is happening next week in 7 days' time, where Anthony Joshua defends his world titles against a very capable challenger in the former cruiserweight undisputed world champion Alexander Usyk. Exciting week ahead of us.
Absolutely. I mean, what a fistic shopping list you just read out as I was cleaning my headphones and putting my mouthpiece in for the night. That's not my false teeth, by the way. Ryan, producer, stop laughing at me, please. Thank you very much. It's very early in the show to be laughing at me. I've just spoken to Alexander Usyk about 2 hours ago. He's at his home in Ukraine. We're going to have a little listen to him earlier and later. And, you know, the funny thing is, I'm really excited, and I know you are, about we've got a proper big fight with a big fight atmosphere with a big week of build-up all next week. You know, Anthony Joshua and Alexander Usyk. I don't know how many of these events are open next week, but they're doing workouts in the O2 Arena on Tuesday.
Doing the weighing in front of crowds as well.
The weighing in front of crowds at the O2 Arena.
Yeah.
The press conference at Spurs. The home of Spurs, is it Tottenham Hotspur Stadium?
That's right. It feels proper again, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And not only that, Ad, you know this. We kind of got a bit excited about it when we came together tonight for the show, and it's like, this is going to be good this week, and we've missed it. Mm. I know you've been out to Fight Island with the UFC, and you know I've been to a couple of events, but it's not the same as when you get into the centre of one of those big stadiums and you've been around them all week, and I always laugh when I say it, when you're sniffing them up close all week.
You're
sniffing them up close and you're getting a sense of who's got a little bit of nerves or who's got a mark under the eye or a momentary chink in the armour. And it's a bit like this evening I had a good 45-minute chat with Alexander Usyk, with some of the other members of the national press, and just a tiny little bit in myself at the end for us. And he's quite serious. He's more serious than I ever remember him. And I think he's really up for this. Mm. And I got kind of excited thinking about those exchanges where you you just don't know if one of them is going to go any moment, you know. And every fight that Anthony Joshua has is exciting because he's learning on the job. I've done a piece in the Sunday Telegraph tomorrow in which Anthony last week was saying how he's been training with one hand behind his back, just using his left hand, so his right-hand side is exposed
to the southpaw.
To the southpaw stance of Alexander Usyk. Mm. It's fascinating. I mean, it's a bit like years ago, Joe Frazier trained with one hand. He had his left hand tied behind his back. Obviously, he was a famous triple left hooker and brilliant with the left hand, but they used to get him to tie his left hand behind his back. We certainly did for the trilogy fight with Muhammad Ali, according to Jerry Eisenberg, as he told me, the old 90-year-old American journalist, that to get the right hand working, because they wanted to have that as a surprise weapon against Ali. Mm. So it's all building. It's all really exciting. And, you know, last week we were moaning and groaning about, you know, Evander Holyfield stepping into the ring. Was that last weekend?
Yes, it was.
Oh, God, I've been talking about it all week. We've got to talk about it again tonight.
Probably.
Oh, dear. Mm. Hang on, let me just clean my ears out.
Well, that's what I mean. We're going to try our very best to keep the majority of the show positive and upbeat, because there's a lot to be really excited about. Mm. This week's going to be a great week. There's loads of questions around next weekend's fight. For anybody that comes at me and says, Alexander Usyk's not done it heavyweight, AJ's going to smoke him. Listen, you don't know what you're watching. This, for me, is Anthony Joshua's toughest professional task. Other people will say maybe it's second to Klitschko, but I think everybody's in that bracket around that.
Look, think of it like this, right? Anthony Joshua won Olympic gold in London, super heavyweight gold in London. I think it was 35 amateur fights he'd had at the time. Mm. Alexander Usyk...
Same Olympic Games.
What do you mean?
Usyk.
And Usyk in the Olympic, same Olympic Games, won the heavyweight gold medal. Mm. Usyk just had then his 350th amateur fight and won 335 of them, lost 15, and probably 10 of those he was done because of his weird scoring in the amateur game. He is an incredible fighter. He's grown up in the shadow of the great Klitschkos, Vladimir and Vitaly. They inspired a generation. He's trained in and worked under the same amateur setup as Vasyl Lomachenko, and Anatoly Lomachenko is going to be in the corner for him next week.
Yeah. First time for quite a while, actually, isn't
it? Yeah, but he's bringing him. And
this is serious, mate.
It's big. I'm getting tingles now. You're getting tingles.
Yeah, man.
Because Anatoly, he's got a Zen-like quality about him. He knows the shapes and movements and angles. And I know Vasyl Lomachenko's slightly tainted because he lost to Teofimo Lopez last year, and that kind of aura left him a little bit.
He's bounced back well, though.
Oh, yeah, he has bounced back. He's a nailed-down Hall of Famer, in my view, already. But to have... Vasily will be here. The Klitschkos will be here. We're going to see all of them next week. Anatoly's going to be there, like, zen-like, on the end of the dais at the press conference. Mm. Duh.
That's good. I am feel, mate. I am really feel. I think it's only fair that we hear from both men. We'll hear from Anthony Joshua, first and foremost, shall we? Because Anthony Joshua has been slimming down, getting himself into impeccable shape. I've seen various pictures of him. I've not been in the same physical presence as him at the moment, hopefully to do so this week. But he looks in incredible shape. Looks like he shedded a few pounds, which insinuates maybe that he's coming in lighter and looking for speed rather than power. Let's hear from AJ.
For me, when people see me, they still see me as a big, big heavyweight. So, yeah, the weight has adapted due to the type of training I'm doing for the type of fighter. Luckily, I'm in a stage now. Early on in my career, when you're fighting every other month, you're just kind of training. Now I'm fighting specifically. I'm training specifically for certain fighters, if you get what I'm saying. So, like, I've got a long period of time. When you're starting off, you're fighting once every month or two. So you're just in the gym, practicing. Don't matter if they're tall, short, you're just kind of still working on yourself. But now I'm working directly for this opponent, and my body takes shape in the way I'm training, really. So my body just forms its own weight, its own size, its own shape for the type of fighter I'm fighting.
It is interesting because you said right at the start of the show that AJ is learning on the job. I mean, he's been champion for such a long period of time now, and he's writing what he's saying there. There's been plenty of time for other people during their tenure and their careers to develop themselves and to learn about themselves, whereas Anthony Joshua has been training for specific types of opponent. We've seen very different Anthony Joshuas over the years. We've seen bigger ones, we've seen smaller ones, we've seen slimmer ones, we've seen faster ones, and we've seen ones that pack that deadly power. What are you anticipating? I mean, from a physical point of view, he looks like he is slimming down, very similar to what we saw in the second Ruiz fight. Are you anticipating an Anthony Joshua that is going to be boxing Alexander Usyk, or are you anticipating one that is going to be looking for destruction?
Yeah, I think he's got to be explosive, and he's got to be fast, and he's got to be not having that little dip he has or has had in some fights where he takes a rest in the seventh or eighth round. He didn't against Andy Ruiz. He maintained that kind of momentum against 21 stone Andy Ruiz that was in Saudi, though, wasn't it? Who'd already made, you know, $15 million and had five sports cars that were going to parties all the time with him in them. He's got to be really on his game, Adam. He's got to be even elusive himself. Because Usyk is I think he's not just a very good ring general. I think he's cunning. He has a cunning look on his face. He's a cunning man. And I'm sure he's got a cunning game plan. You know, because the conventional wisdom is that Anthony Joshua will have looked at what Derek Chisora did against Alexander Usyk and know that he does find it difficult against a much bigger man. He is smaller. He's going to be a stone lighter. That's the great thing about the heavyweight division. People can be as big as they want to be. And I think one of the things about Joshua is, to me, he never looks any different physically. I just always see him as looking incredibly lean. His arms are always huge. I think he's been after more lean muscle mass for this contest, because I think he's got to win the battle of the exchanges in this fight. And I think he will be let off the leash by Rob McCracken. It won't be like the Pulev fight where, you know, stay behind your jab, dominate the fight, win with the jab, and then when you've broken him down, then go for the kill, which he could have in the fourth round, but it took him till the ninth. He can't do that against Usyk. If Usyk is standing there at the end, I've repeated this so many times, if Usyk is standing there at the end of the 11th round and going into the 12th round, something in my view hasn't gone right. I could be completely wrong about this, but in my mind, something's gone wrong if he hasn't managed to get to Usyk by around about 8 or 9 or 10 rounds.
Let's hear from the Ukrainian before we put a rubber stamp on this, heading into fight week. Gareth caught up with Alexander Usyk a little earlier on, and there is an interpreter with this as well for you to fully understand the big Ukrainian.
Given that you won the Olympic gold in London, that you have a lot of fans in the UK, that you fought here, is it a happy place mentally for you to come and have a world title fight?
Олександре, а з огляду на те, що ви виграли золото в Лондоні на Олімпіаді, у вас тут багато фанів, полівальників. Для вас Лондон – це щасливе, радісне місце? Тобто ви будете з задоволенням тут битися?
Я буду з великим призадоволенням там битися. Я дуже полюбляю це місце. І взагалі Британія така фартова для мене.
Well, it will be with great pleasure. I will be boxing in London, in the UK. I love London, and this is my lucky place. Actually, London is my lucky place.
We know you're a lot of fun, and you know this is the most serious I think I've ever seen you. How excited are you about the coming week? How excited are you that you could become heavyweight champion of the world?
Ну, з огляду на те, що ви так взагалі так виглядаєте спокійно, а
можливо, я їх не показую, і да й не треба їх показувати. Я чекаю, все повинно бути step by step. Не треба поспішати нікуди. Спішиш, народ смішиш, як то говорять.
Perhaps I'm not showing my emotions well, and I don't think I should really show my emotions. Let's not rush, and as they say, you shouldn't really rush, because there's a saying in Russian or Ukrainian, there's the saying that if you rush, you will make people laugh. So we'd rather kind of, I'd rather be calm and not rushing things.
And finally, before we get very excited ourselves about what is going to be an amazing build-up to this fight with 60,000 fans at Tottenham Hotspur, Have you got any tricks up your sleeve to get into Anthony Joshua mentally in this week?
Ну і перед тим, як ми хайпу наберемося там і себе розкрутимо, тим, як збереться на Тоттенхем стадіоні 60 тисяч болівальників, у вас є якісь трюки, якісь хитрощі, щоб якось психічно, ментально повпливати, вплинути на Ентоні?
Блін, якщо я зараз про це розкажу, то він буде знати.
Well, guys, if I'm telling you now, he will find it out, so...
He's always there. He's always on it, is Oleksandr Usyk. A fascinating character. Gareth Davies catching up with him a little earlier on, ahead of fight week. He's in Ukraine at the moment, but he's making his way to the UK for this fantastic fight next weekend at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. I've just got a funny feeling. From an Usyk point of view, this is how I think he's going to approach this fight. I think he's going to approach it quite similarly to the way that he approached the Belyu fight. I think he's going to try and make Anthony Joshua work at a pace that Anthony Joshua might not necessarily want to work at, in order to, what you just mentioned a moment or two ago, Gareth, try and hope that at 6, 7, 8, there's a little bit of a dip in the cardiovascular output of Anthony Joshua, where then Usyk can put his foot down and do
his
thing.
I think that's very astute. I mean, I think he won't worry if Joshua's four rounds ahead.
I would not be surprised if Anthony Joshua's six up and we're all going, this is a boxing masterclass.
I have asked him as well, have you projected forward in your mind, do you see Anthony Joshua knocked out? And he wouldn't answer it. He said, I do not project forward, but that is what he's looking at. There's no doubt about it. He just needs Joshua. He knows he can't go into a toe-to-toe with this guy because he'll get knocked out.
Yep.
'Cause Joshua's an amazing finisher, but he just needs him in the right position.
Yeah,
and he'll have worked on that over and over and over again with Anatoly. And they're looking for that position, and he's moving around, and is Joshua following him, and is it time to come back and find that left hand or that left hook and go over Joshua's jab and kind of see a little wobble and jump on him? It's so exciting.
And these are the reasons, right? Hopefully this is coming through on the radio. These are the reasons why we love this sport at the very highest level. So many questions. How's this person going to come in weight-wise? How's this person going to approach this tactically? This is not a barroom scrap. This is serious, high-level combat.
And it's not two people who are not boxers or faded stars or MMA guys trying to box.
Peak.
Saying, I'm going to knock him out on... No, this is true peak elite physical chess games, isn't it? And it'll be mental all week as well, and I mean in the kind of psychological way. It's going to be amazing. And neither of these guys for 2 or 3 years have been in the rhythm of fighting in front of tons of people. I mean, honestly, the crowd is going to have a massive effect.
Yeah, great.
Right now they're going to be walking in a week's time. Oh, I can't wait. 168 hours time.
Right then, keeping it on the heavyweight theme, let's speak to former WBO heavyweight champion of the world, Joseph Parker. He's had a fight announced this week that he's taking on Derek Chisora for a second time. That's going to go down in December. We, of course, spoke to him about that, and we've flipped in a little bit of AJ Usyk conversation as well. Here's how it sounded.
December the 18th, rematch with Chisora. It's my first rematch with someone, so it's one that I'm looking forward to because the other fight wasn't the most dominant performance. The other fight wasn't the most clear win. I know I got the win, but it wasn't the most clear win. And a lot of people argue that because he put on the pressure, because he got the knockdown, he may have edged it. I believe I edged it. So this is the chance for me.
Yeah.
This is the chance for me to cement it. And I there's no secret that I need a way better performance. Otherwise, what's the point of me boxing and being involved if I can't really, you know, perform and then, you know, look at bigger fights?
I mean, the thing is, like, you know, he's become a cult figure over time in a similar way to Dillian White has, and you played a part in that as well. And, you know, is this your sixth fight in the UK, I make it?
Yeah, it is my, yeah, yeah. I've actually had, you know, a lot of my recent fights in the UK.
Yeah.
So, and it's one of those places where we fought there. And, you know, we made friends, we met a lot of people. Then each time we come back, we just get more and more support. And I feel like it's one of those places where we are very welcome, you know, and we're actually quite comfortable there.
Well, you've been in good fights as well, let's be honest. Have been very big ones. The 12-round fight with Anthony Joshua, which is a very big event at the time. And since then, you've been pursuing your world title back. You know, you've had one fight in New Zealand, which you had to win that one, stay on track, really. Putting people in their place back in the homeland, letting everybody know you're the number one over there. I assume you're going to be working with Andy Lee over here. Where will you go and when will camp start?
Camp will start, the 9th, the 10th of October. We're looking at Ireland and the UK, but I think Morecambe is the place where we're sort of settled, you know, because of visa issues. And I feel, you know, the 10-week camp is a really good sort of length of camp to learn and to progress. And, you know, there's no reason to smash the body in the beginning. You just progressively get better, keep learning, keep working on things each day.
You're almost, you mentioned Morecambe, and you know what comes into my mind is the Samoan Gypsy King. because you'll be bumping into a Fury or two while you're up there, won't you?
Yeah, I'll be. You know, he'll probably be there. You know, his fight's in a few
October
weeks' 9th. Time.
October 9th.
Yeah, October 9th.
Yeah.
So I the plan is that hopefully I can make it over to that fight, so just to be a part of the atmosphere and you know, watch other heavyweights go at it, and then from there head over to Morecambe. And you know, Tyson might be there. He's busy. He's got a newborn baby. He's got, you know, his family to take care of. But he might be in the gym here and there to, you know, to help and to support and see what we're doing.
I mean, you're all in that merry-go-round. You know, a victory for you over Derek Chisora sets up a great 2022 for you. Just as we were about to speak today, I think maybe overnight or today, Otto Wallin, the opponent for Dillian White. What do you make of that? I mean, am I being unfair by saying I'm disappointed that that's the opponent for the interim WBC title?
Yeah, I'm not sure how they came about that fight. Really, I think there were other names being thrown out there, and you know, I think after the Chisora fight, we did ask if he was available to, you know, to have a rematch, but they said he was busy. So I think the only option for us was Chisora at the time we asked.
Yeah, because the thing is, if you look at the chess game in the heavyweight division, if you're interested in a title, I mean, White's been saying about a title for so long. Oleksandr Usyk's getting his opportunity, and he's waited a little while for his title against Anthony Joshua. Did you ever box Oleksandr Usyk?
Never boxed him, but he achieved a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. You never met him in the amateurs, no?
Never met him in the amateurs, no.
Do you think he's as tricky an opponent for Joshua as some of us are maybe thinking?
I feel like he's going to be a tricky fighter, you know, with the southpaw stance, the movement, you know, up and down. We've seen in a lot of his fights the way that he moves, the way that he, you know. But I think just naturally, Joshua being a heavyweight will make a big difference. You know, Oleksandr Usyk isn't a natural heavyweight, but it's good on him for coming up to the heavyweight and, you know, giving it a go.
Do you, given that you seem to be fighting Brits all the time, are you going to call out Joe Joyce at any point soon?
Listen, I would have loved to fight Joe Joyce. I think he called me out, and I guess after the Sora fight, if I get a good win and look good, that'll be the fight that we can have next. You know, I'll fight anyone in the UK or anyone in the world.
Yeah, really. Yeah, it feels like that. Yeah. Now, it's a weird situation for you coming out of, like, one person has tested positive for COVID in New Zealand and the whole country's shut, isn't it? Am I right in saying that, or am I making that up?
One person tested positive, and then it just became one of those domino effects where just that person was there. And now, you know, the whole country's been on lockdown for 4 weeks, for nearly five weeks. So it's one of those things that's taken very seriously here. As soon as something happens, lockdown, and everyone has to stay home.
Does it bother you? Does it affect your kind of daily routine at all, or what you're up to or not?
I was traveling with my family. Very blessed that we were able to travel. We came back to New Zealand 2 weeks in MIQ. The day we got out was the day New Zealand went into lockdown. So we've been locked down ever since. Quality family time, training every day. Not as busy as usual. You know, usually am. The meetings and doing this, doing that. So I'm making the most of being here and being with my family.
When you have the fight then on the 18th of December, my understanding is if you go home, you've got to be in a hotel for 2 weeks, so you'd miss Christmas with your family.
Yeah, that is the understanding at the moment. Well, my understanding is that if I do come back to New Zealand, it'll be 2 weeks in a hotel. Things may change. They might, you know, welcome the isolation at home, self-isolation, or things, you know, just not sure yet at the moment what New Zealand are planning.
Because Joseph Parker does not spend Christmas without those beautiful little kids, does he?
It'll be hard. It'll be hard to be away for 10 weeks from them. And then if I have to spend Christmas by myself, or, you know, it'll be different. So, you know, what's the other option is to fly them up to the UK and spend Christmas there, New Year's there, continue fighting, and they continue keeping busy. Because there's nothing here in New Zealand in terms of boxing. The scene is right there.
Have they not said, Daddy, we want you to fly us to Lapland to see Father Christmas and the reindeer?
They've said many things.
I've got to ask you, right, heavyweight question, and this is a heavyweight question. It was kind of atrocious in my eyes last week, but Evander Holyfield boxing at 58 and almost not capable of defending himself.
Listen, before we even got on this call, I was thinking about it. Like, I was just thinking about the world and boxing and what's been happening, and you know, the fighter that he used to be. You know, obviously at that age, you're never going to be the same. You're never, and it's a risk to his health. And I know these promoters are putting on these events and people are tuning in to watch, but I just felt like he shouldn't have fought. He's taking away from the legacy he had, like the great fights he's been involved in.
In the last 4 or 5 months, Logan Paul, Jake Paul. It's been quite interesting that, you know, Logan Paul against Floyd Mayweather, I don't know if you saw it, but it was like a weird...
I saw it.
Goodness. Jake Paul against Tyron Woodley. I don't know if you know Tyron from your days in Vegas, but it's quite interesting. I mean, are they bringing new eyeballs to the sport? Is it diluting the art that you practice day in, day out, that you've now done for what, maybe 18, nearly 20 years? Have you done it now, you know?
Yeah, well, 29, probably 24 years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, are they diminishing what you do, what amateur boxers achieve over time? Or what's your take on it?
Mine is a little bit on the fence, really. Like, good on them for, you know, they've created this big image for themselves. Now they're making the most of it. And they see boxing as a way of, you know, getting good income, getting people interested. So you can't really knock anyone for giving it a go. But on the other sort of sense is that there's other fighters out there giving it their whole lives, and they just haven't been given a chance to fight on a big stage and being involved in big fights. And so it's just one of those things where there's got to be a balance, you know. There's got to be a balance, a better balance.
Now, away from the big fight this week, in a couple of weeks' time over in Las Vegas, there's a rematch going on between Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. Yes, don't let that pass you by. Well, a young heavyweight from Romford has been up in Morecambe sparring the Gypsy King himself, Tyson Fury. That's right. The Romford Bull, Johnny Fisher, joined myself and Gareth on the show on Saturday to discuss that and the development of his career.
Did not hesitate. People should tune in and watch, because I'm on a journey where I'm learning very much as I go. The sparring that I've been doing with Daniel Dubois, Joe Joyce's, Dave Allen's, Huey Fury's, all them sort of guys, and that is one way of learning. I know it's completely different sparring them guys. I've got to translate that calmness to take from the spars into real fights, but that will come. All that matters is I'm getting fights, I'm staying active, and I'm very grateful to be on the platform I'm on.
It's very, very different. I'm from Romford, I'm from Essex. It's a very lively place where I'm from. But it was really nice to change it up, go up to Morecambe, right on the sea. I love the apartment Tyson put me in. It was beautiful and the perfect place. If you're in the training camp, there's no better place to be, because there isn't much going on. Mm. But it's peaceful and the people there are all genuine. And I had a really great time for the few days that I was there.
I'm a little bit gutted for you, because obviously you are in training camp. You're working hard there. There won't have been enough time to sample some proper fish and chips. You know what I mean? That's what Morecambe is famous for, my man. You'll have to go back at some point. Take the family up there, have a good old go on some definitely good cod and chips, my friend.
Don't get me wrong, I was walking along the seafront and I saw a few fish and chip shops, but I had to make the sensible choice of salad and sandwiches rather than fish and chips. So
come on, you're a heavyweight, Johnny. You're the bull, you know. I expect you to say no. Do you know what I did?
Yeah.
I had fish and chips for breakfast.
Good lad.
I went and sparred him for 10 rounds.
That's it.
He beat the crap out of me. I went for lunch. I had some more fish and chips
pie and chips for lunch. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Couple of pints. I went back.
I did have pie mash today, so that's an exception. I can say that. I was down in Brentwood and had pie mash. So I haven't been very strict all the time.
Cheat day. You're allowed to cheat there, mate. You've been working
hard.
Saturday's
cheat day. Yeah.
Exactly. Come on then. I mean, there's a lot come out since you're up there. You've come and put the headlines from you being up there sparring with Tyson Fury are, you know, you felt he's the most talented boxer in the world and that he's extraordinary. Obviously, I don't mean you're a novice, but you're just coming into to your own. Tell us about the ins and outs of it. Did you manage to floor him? Did you trap the big fella in the corner? Was he telescopic with those arms? Was it like fighting a giant giraffe? Tell us what it was like.
Listen, there was no flooring or anything like that going on, but it was a good tasty couple of spars, and the pressure that he has, even when he's not completely on you, just because of the range, the height, the way he uses his feet, that puts you under a certain kind of psychological pressure.
Yeah.
I've sparred some good names, Daniel Dubois, Joe Joyce, Dave Allen, Huey Fury, and I've got to say Tyson Fury is just, he is the best in the world, and I saw why he's the best in the world in them spars. Very, very cute, very clever, but at the same time, being a 19 and a half stone, 6 foot nine man, it's like these two things shouldn't go together, but they do go together really well. Mm. And it was great for me to have the opportunity. And don't get me wrong, I held my own and I impressed Tyson a bit up there, and his dad was watching and he was impressed. He said, I'm very, very strong. And I'm a rough diamond in the sense that I've got so much maturing to do. I've got such a long way to go. But getting around people like that, you can't get around anyone better than that, and that's what's going to progress me and make me a better fighter.
When you went on the pads with John, because John would have said, come over here, son, come over here. When he took you on the pads, did you give him a little dig to the body or not, or are you too scared to do that?
I'm not going to do that to Big John Fury, because I know he can still handle himself. I'm not going to get involved in any of that.
Johnny, on a more serious note, my man, obviously the physical work and the things that you learn, as you've just been mentioning, footwork and various bits there, are listen, that's gold, absolute gold for you to be able to get that. But talk to me about just the psychological aspects of being around the WBC, heavyweight champion of the world, as you're preparing for this big title defence against Deontay Wilder, picking his brains, talking to him about this moment in his career, and how that's hopefully going to shape your career and the journey that you're going on. What was that side of it like for you?
When you walk into that gym, obviously you're very aware that he's the world champion, he's the best on the planet in my opinion, but he's such a down-to-earth man. It was just him and Sugar Hill and the other sparring partners, and he was talking to us for 20 minutes after sparring, before sparring. He'd let us watch him when he was doing little technical things with Sugar Hill, and just being around that and soaking up little bits like that, that's just as valuable as sparring Tyson Fury, I think, because he's teaching stuff about footwork, lining your feet up properly, how to detonate the right hand properly. Just to be around him and for him to have the generosity for us to listen to that advice was great for all of us who were involved.
Mm.
Is there any chance of you getting out there to be in camp with him in America at any point?
He said to me, John, you're part of all the camps going forward now. I'm impressed and you've done really well. And that was unbelievable to hear. And I'm pinching myself sometimes thinking I've just sparred and I've been around, I'm talking to the best heavyweight on the planet, and he's giving me praise like that. It was just unbelievable to hear. And I don't get above myself. I know I've got a very long way to go. My feet are always going to be on the ground because I know how hard boxing and heavyweight boxing especially can be. So just to have that sort of praise is a little bit of something that I can keep pushing forward with and taking as a good positive moving forward.
Absolutely, man. Listen, you speak incredibly well, man. You've been out there on three occasions now in the professional game. How much are you enjoying it? How much are you enjoying this process at the moment?
I'm absolutely loving it. A year ago, I wouldn't have even dreamed of being where I am on the platform I'm on with Eddie Hearn and Sam Jones as my manager. He's doing a great job. He's a great friend of mine as well, Sam Jones. So to be where I am, looking back, I was just finishing university really this time last year, and I didn't have much of a clue what I was doing. I just went with it, and I've got to enjoy the journey as much as anything. I think that's what a lot of people have said to me. I even spoke to Richard Towers on my debut. He said, enjoy the journey, enjoy these things. This is the fun part, because as it gets more and more serious, there's more and more things you've got to worry about. Just enjoy the learning part, the part you're coming up, and this is why you do boxing, because you love being in fights, you love being in the big nights, and I've got to soak it all up and enjoy it while I can.
Can you imagine then Adam and I have been talking, Johnny, about the big fight next weekend at Spurs, 60,000 people. Can you imagine the pressure? Even though he wants it, even though he feels born to it, can you imagine the pressure that Anthony Joshua is actually under, that he's not acknowledging at the moment? It's extraordinary, isn't it?
I think that you've hit the nail on the head there with the not acknowledging it, and it is a huge pressure, but you've got to detach yourself from it, because at the end of the day, when you're boxing, it's only you and your close friends and family and your team who really it really matters to, in a sense. There's lots of people watching, there's lots of eyes on you, but in life and everything, you've got to do what makes you happy. And if it's making Anthony Joshua happy, that's why he's there. If he didn't want to do it, he wouldn't be there. So he's enjoying the process, and what bigger stage can he do it on? There's no other bigger stages. So
you're going
to
be there?
Fair play to him. I'm not going to be there, no, unfortunately. My two managers will be there, and my managerial stablemate, Florian Marcus, fighting on the card as well.
So
I'm sure it'll be a great event. I'm going to see Sam Jones next week when he's down in London.
Good man. Listen, you've started this professional journey in the most craziest of times worldwide with the pandemic and what have you. Obviously, fought at Wembley Arena. We've had Manchester Arena and the Matchroom HQ Garden and what have you. I saw you up at the Josh Warrington fight, having a look round there at Leeds and the stadium, and you know the eyes were nice and wide. You're thinking to yourself, I fancy a little bit of this. This is a bit of all right. How much are you looking forward to that? Being in front of those packed houses.
I cannot wait. I'm telling you, I cannot wait, because I'm very lucky to be where I'm from, and the people that I've met and the people I met at university. I've got a very good support base, a good set of people around me, and I want nothing more than them to be all there cheering me on and supporting me, because people do offer you support. People who come and watch, and they want to invest their time in you, and they talk about you when they're out. And the best way to repay them is to give them a big night and get an emphatic victory. And I looked around at that Leeds Stadium. It was just unbelievable to think that one day I could have something like that.
Well, three and a half.
Leighton Orient, man.
Or is he Leighton Orient fan?
Yeah.
Is he?
Leighton Orient.
Orient.
My dad used to play for Leighton Orient until the age of 18.
Forgive my soccer ignorance.
No.
He just called it soccer. You can have a go at him for calling it that, mate. Come on, it's football.
He can say what he wants. He's Gareth. He can say what he wants.
I'm a rugby boy like you, unfortunately. But I can imagine 4.5 years from now, 3 years from now, Johnny Fisher versus Daniel Dubois at our old Olympic Stadium.
Hey, that'll be
50,000 in the outside in the summer. Is that the kind of thing that kind of really gets the juices flowing, gets you up doing those rocky runs at 5 a.m. and on the wet mornings in Dagenham?
I love training anyway. I don't have to have a big fight to get up for it. It's part of my lifestyle, is training. Since I was about 16, 17, I've loved the thrill of training. But obviously, when you talk about big fights like that with other names that are coming up as well, that's why we're in the sport, for big nights and to have that little bit of glory, that little bit of legacy. That's always going to be another little bonus, a little bit of added motivation. So, of course, that does excite me.
Let me urge you to go. You've done your degree. Do your PhD in boxing now, and go to all the American gyms and spar. Go to New York. Go to Gleason's. Go to the Mayweather gym. Go in Tyson Fury's training camp in America.
Yeah.
Make the journey, because you won't regret it. You know,
100%. That's great advice, and I'm going to take that on board, because America is where it's a different style. I've only been there for 3 weeks once with Joe Joyce's camp, and it was a different environment completely. I went to the Ishmael Salas gym and the Linares gym. It was just a different experience, and as you said, experience is key, and gaining all of that, that's all going to be little things in the bank for when it does come to them big nights.
Well, it's all those African Americans, Puerto Ricans, Mexicans all coming, trying to knock your head off. You're just going to learn so much, you know. That's the thing. Mayweather gym at midnight in Vegas, sparring at midnight. I mean, come on.
Yeah, no pain chips there, mate. There's no cotton chips there, pal, let me tell you.
Won't find a fish and chips around there.
Exactly. Listen, Johnny, thank you so much for giving up a bit of your time on a Saturday night and coming to join us, mate. Top man.
Have
you got a date yet? Have you got a date for the fourth fight yet?
Well, 30th of October, Dillian White undercard, O2 Arena.
Nice.
So a few of my fans can come and be in then. Be brilliant.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Another fight that's recently been announced is for the WBO Super Featherweight Championship of the World. The champion, Jamel Herring, is defending against the interim champion, Shakur Stevenson. And Shakur Stevenson joined us on the show on Saturday.
I feel like I'm not fighting for a vacant belt. I'm fighting against the actual champion, somebody who defended his title several times. I'm just ready to put on a great show, sir.
I believe that you've been sparring with a friend of our show, Regis Progres. Talk to me about that, about meeting up with Regis and getting some working with him.
I think that was great work. He's a bigger guy, naturally bigger guy. Regis definitely brings some good things to the table. But like I said, I'm fighting Jamel Herring, and that's a whole different style, a whole different everything. So like I said, I'm ready to fight, though. That's all. I can't really keep talking about the fight. I'm ready to put some action in.
Talk to me about the strengths of Herring. Obviously, you've probably watched him on a couple of occasions, man. What does he bring to the table for this fight on the 23rd?
I mean, he's a real big 130. He's tall. I know that he's going to come in shape. That's really it. That's really all I can really say about him. I just know that he want to win, so do I. Ain't no way I'm letting him beat me.
You two have similar friendship groups. Is that right? Because I know that obviously you are quite close with Terence. I know that he's been quite close with Terence and what have you in the past. Do your friendship groups merge? Do they cross over?
Yeah, we do. We cool with some of the same people. Like I said before, he's a friend of my family, friend of the family. That's it.
How does that work with the narrative of the fight, or does that not even enter your mind when preparing for something like this?
I mean, that's something that somebody else might look at it as something, but I just see it as business. I ain't cool with him. He ain't one of my friends. So me and him don't check up on each other outside boxing. We ain't friends, so they need to make sure that they know that this is not no friendly fight. This is an actual fight.
Last weekend, we were watching Oscar Valdez and Robson Conceição, and at the end of the fight, obviously, Oscar ended up getting his hand raised in a fight that a lot of us here in the UK believe that shouldn't took place anyway, but it did, and he won. And he mentioned your name. He mentioned the winner of this particular fight as an opponent that he would want next. What did that make you feel like?
I ain't worried about Oscar Valdez right now. I got to take care of the 23rd. So Jamel Herring is the person who actually want to beat me. He got a belt, and he's training his ass off right now to take something away from me.
That's fair enough. What did you make of the WBC allowing him to fight?
I disagree with it. I feel like if that was any other fighter or a black fighter, to be specific, I feel like we'd have been suspended or there'd been some harsh rules. I feel like with him, they just gave him a slap on the wrist. And, I disagree with it, but I mean, at the end of the day, he's still in my weight. He's still a fighter that has something to bring to the table. And, I mean, for the boxing world, it's bad, but for me, it's like I still got a big fight with him later on down the line. So,
what can we expect on October 23rd, my man? It's a fight that a lot of fight fans here in the UK are extremely excited about. We've got a good broadcast deal with Sky Sports. You're going to be live on there against Jamel Herring for this world title fight. What can we expect, Shakur?
You can expect a superstar to be born. I feel like it's going to be one of the best performances of my career. So, I'm just excited and ready to work.
Listen, I think a superstar's already been born. I've been lucky enough to be ringside for your fights, my friend. I've seen superstardom. I know what people can expect. But like you say, an opportunity to become a two-weight world champion really does kick that legacy onto the next level.
Yes, sir. Now I finally get the big fights, and it's going to open up big opportunity for bigger fights. So I'm just ready.
Now, following on from that, lots of conversations have been going on around the Oscar Valdez-Robson Conceição fight from last week. Should it have gone ahead? Should it not have gone ahead? Well, we spoke to a man that was responsible for the sanctioning of that fight and for it being a WBC world title bout. The president of the WBC, Maurizio Sulaiman, joined us on the show.
I'm very happy and very honoured to be in this great show. Thank you so much.
And we've got lots to talk about. There's lots of positives. But there's also things that quite a lot of boxing fans have been speaking about over the last 7 to 14 days in particular. And we'll start with last weekend, with the Oscar Valdez-Robson Conceição fight, which was sanctioned for the WBC Super Featherweight Championship of the World. I'm sure every boxing fan that is listening to this knows the story going into this fight, where Oscar Valdez failed a VADA test for fentanyl. And despite the WBC being affiliated with VADA for the clean boxing program, that fight was still sanctioned to go ahead. Obviously, Maurizio, you're here. For people that are listening, please explain your reasons as to why the WBC continued to sanction that as a world title fight.
Sure, thank you. The WBC created the clean boxing program. It is run by VADA. And to try to make it very simple for everyone to understand, there are over 300 banned substances, and there's a wide variety between all those substances of the effects, the harm, the danger, the way that you treat each one of those prohibited substances in the list. So the WBC did receive the adverse finding. We did a thorough investigation. It's a substance that is much less different or dangerous than many others that are very dangerous. It was found a month before the fight. There was a protocol put into this finding, and Valdez was and will be performing a specific protocol that will last 1 year. So it did not go unnoticed. There were penalties for Valdez, but it's simply a substance that gives him no performance advantage whatsoever. So people hear there's a doping, and they reach conclusions very fast. And we expect that they would learn more about the specific case, understand it, and then reach a final conclusion. But that does not happen.
Okay, I've got a few questions off that. First of all, the clean boxing program. Obviously, you use VADA and their testing protocols. Where does that leave your clean boxing program now? If VADA are going to find, for example, substances like fentanyl. But the recommendations are not going to be upheld.
No, I think you have to understand something. VADA ends the process when they notify of the finding.
Yes.
That's where they end. That's then the WBC takes over. So it is the WBC who manages the results. So, as I said, there are more than 300 substances.
Mm-hmm.
So it is like treating a minor offense and trying to give a lifetime jail sentence. So what I'm trying to explain is it is a minor situation that we found on fentanyl.
Why use VADA then to do your testing? Because this is where the confusion comes from a lot of boxing fans. Obviously, we've got WADA and we've got VADA. They're not on the same page. As you've just mentioned there, there's 70 substances or stimulants
that they don't agree with.
That they don't agree on in and out of competition testing. So therefore, in this case, for people that don't know too much about it, VADA have tested, they found a substance that's on the 70 stimulants, and they found it outside of competition, but they have it on their prohibited list outside of competition, whereas WADA, World Anti-Doping, have it okay outside of competition. They use it as a banned substance in competition, which is on the day of the fight. There's so many different messages that are being sent out on performance-enhancing drug testing to fans right now, which is becoming incredibly confusing. And from their point of view, as they look at this, with you being affiliated to VADA, Maurizio, they think that something untoward has happened here because it feels like you've changed the rules to suit this particular narrative.
No, no, please understand. I don't know how to explain it. We do the results management. There was a prohibited substance found on Oscar Valdez, and we did a thorough protocol and investigated everything that has to do. This substance is not of the danger of a others that are very dangerous and lead to heavy punishment.
Why is it on the WADA list, though? It's still on the WADA list as a prohibited substance.
Yes, but it's like if you go to a store and you put a candy bar in your pocket and you walk out, that is called stealing. Mm-hmm. It's prohibited.
Yeah.
But it's much different than going into a bank with a heavy artillery and rob £1 million and get out. It's stealing. It's also stealing. But you don't get the same penalty for those two different scenarios. The substances are different. We found out, we had many meetings with experts, and we decided that it was not a major incident. It was a minor misdemeanor. And that's how he got the specific ruling that he has to do X, Y, and Z things for the following year. But he was not an offense that would call for his title to be taken away or for the fight to be suspended.
Maurizio, do you think that it would be good to try and get VADA and WADA on the same page with the discrepancy in different substances so that it's...
No, because WADA... VADA is intended for boxing, for contact sports.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the best program out there.
Right.
It is the best, absolutely. And it is the WBC clean program that makes the penalties. We analyze each different scenario. Every case is completely different from one to another. And what we decided was to impose the minor penalties, not the major penalties. So we did penalize Valdez.
So, just to make it absolutely clear, just to put a lid on this for now, if Valdez or any other boxer was taking a substance in this instance that you thought was performance enhancing and carried dangers that the person was enhanced going into a fight, you would have stripped the title and taken them away from the fight.
Could have, yes, could have. I don't want to speculate, but
right.
we have taken titles, we have cancelled fights, we have imposed different penalties to the cases that we have had as positive. So every case is different, every substance is different, and the results management has to be according to the specific case.
Because the other thing is...
It would be very easy for us to look like the heroes of the world, take the title away, suspend the fight, and be the heroes because we are the police and we catch the bad guys. We're not for that. This is not a competition to be popular.
Mm.
We have to do justice. And the justice was very clear. It was not a situation in which... the challenger would be in any trouble or any danger for any performance enhancing. We have tried to explain it thoroughly, and it was very simple. It was caught by a test where he voluntarily and he demanded to have a VADA clean boxing program in all his fights. He has been in 2 Olympic Games. He has been in past 30 tests as a professional boxer. And he is investigating what could have happened to have that substance in his system. We did everything, and we feel very satisfied. But people do not want to learn because it's very complicated. I have no idea. I'm not a chemist. But we had this positive, so we spent countless hours understanding what it is, and we did a thorough investigation up to the, I mean, it was very, very, very strict investigation.
In your defense,
they don't have to do that.
No, in your defense, the ABC, the Association of Boxing Commissions in America, also ratified the bout as well, didn't they? That they agreed that it's not a performance enhancing substance.
But it's on the list. It is on the list. It must be performance enhancing in some way, shape, or form. It must be because anti-doping.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong.
So it's not a performance enhancing drug.
No, it is. You are wrong because prohibited substances are not necessarily PEDs. They can be many different effects. So there's a big difference of a PED and diuretics or marijuana or cocaine. It's a difference. So it is on the list. It is a prohibited substance,
mm-hmm.
but from a wide range of levels.
Okay, that's so what precedent does this set then going forward? If another fighter fails the test for a similar thing, they then have an argument with yourself to say, well, hang on a minute, you've allowed Oscar Valdez to carry on in his fight.
It's so case why by can't, case, though, isn't
so
it?
So why can't I carry on in my fight?
We will see what substance it is and what happened exactly in his case.
Yeah, it's like you're saying it's case by case, isn't it? Look, on a happier note, something you did do very well this week, not that you didn't do well with that, Adam has a particular bugbear with it. I understand your argument. You have warned commissions not to allow people like Evander Holyfield to fight again. Talk to us about that, because you were very unhappy about that last weekend, weren't you?
Yes, it's that is not Evander Holyfield that we saw in the ring. It is a blessing that he was not hurt. It is a blessing that Ortiz did not get hurt, even though it was a horrible knockout.
Mm.
And we are very concerned about the trend of legendary fighters or retired fighters going back into the ring and fight. It all began with some champions having fun doing exhibitions to entertain people and for charity mostly. But now it has come into the attention of large groups who have big pockets and they want to use the fighters to create a new set of events, putting at risk the health and the lives of legendary fighters or novices. There are influencers, there are YouTubers, TikTokers that are going into the ring and doing fights, or athletes from other sports doing fights. And there has to be much attention put into this. Because one thing is an exhibition with headgear, big gloves, and understanding that it's for fun. But how can you have a knockout in an exhibition? That's completely against the itself as an explanation. So we are concerned about the health of the fighters, and we are going to continue to try to sensibilize the locks, because it will go to the boxing commission that hosts an event.
Mm.
If they accept it, it's going to happen.
Maurizio, one thing that also that I was impressed with this week, and this comes off the back of the Oscar Valdez Obson Conceição fight, when the judges' scorecards came in, I think a lot of fight fans actually thought 117-110 was a little bit crazy, because we saw an incredibly tight fight. To see Stephen Blea issue an apology, an explanation as to how he arrived at that particular card, and for that to be endorsed by the WBC this week, I think was a really good thing, because all fight fans want is just transparency.
It was a very transparent statement, wasn't
everybody
it?
Everybody makes a mistake, and if you hold your hands up and you say that you've made a mistake and you give a transparent answer, I think that can only make the sport of boxing a lot more enjoyable for fans going forward.
Yes, that was a very courageous step that Stephen Blea took. He decided to remove himself for some time from appointments for championship fights and go back to basics. do additional training and think of what went wrong. Boxing is a difficult sport. Anyone who saw that fight is, of course, discouraged to see a 117-110 score.
Mm.
And he acknowledged it, and I'm proud of him for coming out with transparency. But we need to work better as an industry to try to find better ways and transparent ways to do our sport. We have a good system that works in many countries with open scoring after the fourth and the eighth round. That at least gives the corners the opportunity to do something while the fight is going on. This fight was very tight, very close. We have received a complaint from Rodinska-Cantiao camp. So we are addressing it, and we are hopeful that things change for the better. But we need to have a collaboration with all the members of the industry. You know, commissions do not accept change. We, human nature is to resist any type of change. So it is very difficult to try to bring in technology or bring in different protocols to try to make scoring better and officiating better.
Mauricio, on a much happier note, we've got very, very excited tonight because we're literally a week away from Anthony Joshua and Alexander Usyk walking to the ring at Tottenham Hotspur Football Stadium here with 60,000 fans. Finally, a big, massive stadium fight. And in 3 weeks' time, obviously, Adam and I will be in Las Vegas and we will see you, no doubt, when the WBC heavyweight title is on the line for the first time in 20 months. And I'm sure it'll be sold out at the T-Mobile Arena when Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder go at it for the third time. You must be happy that the WBC heavyweight title fight is finally going to be fought over and it's two great protagonists going at it.
Yes, the Fury-Wilder second fight was the last event before the pandemic hit the world.
Mm.
The last great event.
Mm.
And so many things have happened since... He got shut down for several months without a single sporting event live.
Mm.
Then there were fights in a bubble, and then we all expected the fight to take place December 19. And then we started the year with a speculation of going into Fury Joshua directly, and everybody was just waiting for a date. Then a court ruled to go for the third fight of Fury and Wilder. Then COVID hit Fury. I mean, so many things have been happening, but the heavyweight division is so exciting. You also have Dillian White fighting on October 30, and you have Andy Ruiz, and you have the newcomers, Joy Joyce, and all these new talents. So we can be looking at 3, 4, 5 years of great heavyweight championship fights. Of course, Joshua and Usyk in the stadium, that's going to be massive. It's going to be so exciting to see it back. So we're going back to normality, and we have to keep protecting each other. But I'm so happy to see the things that are going on in our sport.
A man that is back in camp preparing for his first undisputed title defence is Josh Taylor. Gareth caught up with him this week in the most peculiar of circumstances, but they looked ahead, previewing the fight with Jack Catterall going down in December.
I've been pretty busy. Obviously, the lack of coverage on the lead up to the fight and the lack of coverage on the fight and stuff as well was pretty disappointing for me. But when I come back, the media attention was brilliant, you know, it was really good. I've been doing a lot of things, a lot of media interviews, a lot of TV stuff, a lot of interviews and a lot of media stuff and events and stuff like that, and up and down to London quite a lot. I was up on a Question of Sport, and then I went on to A League of Their Own and things like that. So yeah, it's been fun, it's been pretty cool, it's been a pretty cool couple of months, but it's time to get back to work now.
We're 3 months away from the fight date, pretty much to the day. The 18th of December, Jack Catterall, defence of all the belts, up in Scotland.
Yeah.
Are you in camp now for that duration? Are you back down with Ben Davison in camp for that duration?
Yeah. I've sort of been ticking over the last few weeks, you know, getting myself back into the swing of things and getting run on the miles in the road and things like that, getting myself back into the swing of things with the run. But this is my first week back in camp down in Harlow here in Essex. So yeah, I'm going to be here now for the remainder until the fight, you know, and giving it my all and living and breathing it as I always do, Gareth. You know how I do it. You know, I always live and breathe it and give it my 100% and put my life on hold for this game. So this is how I like to do it, and it'll be no different this one. It'll be, if not even more, because, you know, I've now achieved what I want to achieve. If I wanted to achieve in the sport, it's now holding on to it. You know, people are going to want to come and take what I've got now. So the hard work begins now, you know, if not harder work now, because I've got to keep what I've got now. I've got something that everybody wants, a huge target on my back. So it's up to me to make sure that I can keep these belts.
How disappointed are you that DAZN and Eddie Hearn have put Joseph Parker and Derek Chisora on the same night?
I'm not a big fan of Eddie Hearn, you know. He's done that to me about four times now on the same night of most of my biggest fights. He's also put someone else on that bill or on a bill on the same night. He's done that a number of times to me now, so if he's listening, he can have some of that.
That's a go-away Eddie Hearn sign you've just... Yeah. Do you think it's deliberately to spoil?
Listen, it's happened four times. It's not by accident, is it? You know, it's happened four times that he's done this to me in different shows. He's obviously done it on purpose. You know, it's not by mistake anyway. So he can shove the middle finger right up to him if he wants.
talk to us about Jack Catterall. He's a guy who's patiently waited for his opportunity. This is a massive occasion for him. Talk to us about what you know about him, and I assume you will not be underestimating him for a moment.
100% I'm not underestimating him. I've been getting asked 100% a lot of the time how much, what's next, what's after Jack Catterall, what's next, what do you plan to do on next, are you moving up weight, are you doing this, are you doing that? You know, for me, the only thing for me is Catterall. You know, obviously I do have goals and ambitions, but Jack Catterall is standing in the way of me achieving these goals and ambitions. So the goal then becomes Jack Catterall, and he's a very, very good fighter. He's 26-0. He's beat everybody that's in front of him, you know, with kind of no questions asked. He's had a couple of fights, a couple of tough fights with opponents that, you know, I think I would blow away. But, you know, he is a very, very good fighter. I think it's more due to the fact he's not had the opposition in front of him. So I think we'll see the best of Jack Catterall yet, you know. I think I'll bring out the best in him, but I just believe that his best isn't good enough to beat me.
You have victory projecting forward to the 18th of December. You have victory there, okay. Is there anyone else in that division that you want to fight with outside Jack Catterall at the moment?
I'm only interested in myself. You know, I'm only interested in myself and what I want to do and the goals I want to achieve. I've beat everybody in the division. I've proved I'm the best. I've proved I'm the best time and time again for the last six fights that I'm a world champion. I've proved I'm world class. I then won a world title. I then unified the division. And now I'm undisputed champion. So I feel I've proved that I'm the best in that division, no doubts. So we'll see what happens. If the right fight comes along, yeah, I can stay at 140, at 100%. You know, I believe I'm a career 140-pounder, you know. But I've got the size and the frame and the strength to go up to 147 as well. And hopefully chase a second weight world title. You know, that's goals and ambitions of mine longer down the line. So that's the goals that I've got. But if the right fight comes along at 140 still, then yeah, I'll stay there. You know, but I'm not interested in calling out anybody, or everybody's going to call out me now. So whoever wants to fight, and if it's at the right time for me, I'll take it. I'm not scared of anybody. I'll fight absolutely anybody, Gareth, you know.
obviously going to have this fight in Scotland, and it's going to generate so much interest. You have victory there, okay, and you would you like to take? Obviously, Bob Arum's based in Las Vegas. It's a massive venue. He's always using it. Do you want the opportunity for people to travel for 2022? It looks possible. Do you want the hordes to travel with you to Vegas for a big fight?
Yeah, 100%. You know, although that was my best achievement in my boxing career, for me, it was kind of tainted a little bit, you know, kind of tarnished a little bit because I couldn't take the people that were nearest and dearest to me, my friends, my family, my mum, my dad, my sister, my fiance, my friends, you know, that have been there for me from day one. It was my biggest fight, biggest achievement, and they couldn't be there with me. You know, it was just myself and my team and a couple of my pals that I took with me because my parents couldn't come with me, you know. So it was a little bit tarnished, you know, but we ended up fighting in an arena that with little over 1,000 people in because of the restrictions, the COVID restrictions, you know. And then the week after, it was full capacity. And the week after I boxed, it was full capacity. So it was like a little kick in the teeth. It was just, it's very frustrating, you know. I grew up fighting and watching, like, your Ricky Hattons and all that, going over to America and taking fighters over, your Tyson Furies, and taking armies over, his supporters, Carl Frampton, and, you know, and I finally land a fight like that. I've been fortunate enough to of the 1% of the support to do that. And it gets shut down by nobody allowed to travel with me, not just myself and my team. It was a real kick in the teeth, you know, because you grow up absolutely dreaming of having fights like that in front of you, thousands and thousands of fans, a packed house, and you know, the big atmosphere, you know, taking the travelling support with me, and none of that was able to happen. So it was kind of, I've kind of forgotten about it because it didn't mean much to me because I couldn't take much there. Although the fight meant a lot to me, but forgotten about kind of the whole experience of the thing because it was, for me, it was tainted a little bit.
Yeah, that emotive feeling with the crowd. I mean, I know you're focusing on yourself, as you said, but if you could pick two super fights, and they're in my mind, one from a guy coming up from lightweight to super lightweight, and you going up 247 welterweight, if you could pick two super fights that could stay in legacy for you, who would they be?
Listen, there's lots of fights out there. There's lots of super fights actually out there for me.
I agree.
You know, and it's not just the one you're thinking about. Another one you're thinking about, Teofimo Lopez. That'd be a big fight. The fight with Javonta Davis would also be a big fight. The fight with Regis Progress would also be a big fight. You know, there's lots and lots of fighters out there. And there's fighters coming through the ranks now that are quite good too.
Ryan Garcia?
Yeah, Ryan Garcia, I would love to whip him up, yeah.
That's a big fight as well.
You know, it would be good. So there's lots and lots and lots of mega fights out there for me, though I'm not short of options. So I'm really not fussy, Gareth, or who it is. I believe I can beat every single one of them. So I'm really not fussy who it is or who comes next. I really don't care. I believe in myself to beat every single one of them. You know, and then when I move up to welterweight, I do believe I can win these fights as well. I believe I can beat these guys too. I believe in my own ability and I can win these fights 100%.
I'd love to see you fight Terence Crawford as well. I mean, that's a terrific fight, you know.
Yeah, I'd love to get that fight as well. I'd love to get that fight as well. You know, I think it would be a great fight.
You know him well, Anthony Joshua. You're at the English Institute of Sport with him at the same time. You're at the Olympics with him at the same time. Anthony Joshua fights Alexander Usyk next weekend. What's your take on the fight and what are the dangers of Usyk in your view?
Well, Usyk is a very, very skillful fighter. You know, he can box, he can be crafty, he can be smart, he can be really hard to hit. He can be really good. He's very clever, he knows what he's doing boxing-wise. But at heavyweight, he's at quite a big disadvantage in terms of size and strength. You know, he had a hard time against Derek Chisora, who's not the best of heavyweights. No disrespect to him, but he's no elite heavyweight, Derek Chisora. You know, every time he stepped up in class, he's been beaten or knocked out. So he's not the best of heavyweights, but he comes and gives it a go. and gives it his all. And he gave Usyk a hell of a hard time. You know, I thought he was actually very unlucky not to win the fight. And I thought he was quite unfortunate not to get the victory in the end. But like, having said that, Joshua is much bigger, much stronger than Del Boy, you know, and he's fresher as well. He's younger and fresher. So there's that element. If Joshua decides to come out and be physical and put on him and attack him, I think Usyk might struggle a little bit.
It seems like there's a lot of boxing announcements going on at the moment, whether it be fights or whether it be promotional deals, and that's where we're turning our attention to next. The pretty boy, Josh Kelly, was on the show on Saturday talking about his link-up with Wasserman Boxing.
It's always tough on the loser, isn't it? And this is the greatest sport in the world. Sometimes you come across a guy that will not be denied. And tonight that was David Avanesian, and Josh Kelly was in the shape of his life. Josh Kelly couldn't have been better in that ring tonight. But this man, he wouldn't be denied.
After the last fight, I was contracted with Eddie, and the contract was contracted to that fight, so the amount of fights, it doesn't matter how that fight went, the amount of fights was done, so we had to renegotiate anyway. So Eddie gave his five fights, offered us a five-fight deal with himself and DAZN, and obviously Sarlons, Wasserman and Sky, they all got together, gave us a five-fight deal. And the five-fight deal from the Wasserman and Sarlons and Sky just suited me better personally, mate. It just sort of fit me better. It was just a better deal for me, so I just had to take that, mate. So that's how I come about that. And there's no hard feelings between me and Eddie. It's just business, I think. So obviously, it's been a pleasure to work with Matthew and Eddie for the last, I think, 4 or 5 years. But new chapter now, and I'm looking forward to working with Sarlons and Sky and Wasserman, because Sarlons are a great bunch of guys. I can't wait to get to work with them, mate.
I think, do you know something? It's funny in this modern game, isn't it? Like, everybody automatically thinks that one particular promoter is always the best option for everybody. And it's not necessarily the thing that fits everybody with where they're at currently in their life. As you've just mentioned there, you've got to do what is best for you.
100%. To be honest, Adam, I mean, some people might say, oh, I prefer DAZN. But other people might say, I don't know how to work DAZN. I prefer Sky. It's more traditional. I just click on my telly and I'm just on Sky. Someone might say, well, the Sky subscriptions are this and the DAZN's this. And I didn't go back and forth and argue for either TV production, but I just feel like Sky at the moment, obviously, it's weird as well. That it's a massive platform, and I've always liked boxing on Sky. It's great.
And as well as that, and this isn't to be derogatory in any way to anybody in the game, what you've now got is an opportunity to be the face of the channel. Now with Matchroom being elsewhere and one promoter being fully committed, obviously, to the Sky Sports thing, it gives you an opportunity to, one, get regular, get active, and become a household name, which is, with all due respect, that's where the money's at.
Mate, you could, 100%, that's perfect. Like, Sky's on everyone's telly. You click, you got Sky Sports, you got Sky News, you got most of your football on there, unless you're watching on BT. I mean, you've got everything's normally on Sky, so to be boxing on Sky and have this, like you said, sort of a chance to run at it, really get active on it and fight some good guys and get my name out there and perform the way I know I can, then that's just a massive opportunity for myself, and why wouldn't I grab that with both hands and run with it?
When can we expect to see you then performing for the first time?
Either be December the 4th or December the 11th. There's two dates there, but none of them. It's going to be one, and there's obviously only going to be one fight. So it's either going to be the fight card's going to be on the 11th or on the 4th. So either one of them, I want to be on.
Now, I've stood next to you, mate. I know that you're a big 147, right? So what is the situation? Are we still staying at welter? Are we going to have a little bit of a flirt with super welter? What are we going to do?
I mean, obviously, I can meet welter, but I feel as though an extra 7 pounds will give you a lot of strength up at super welter. I mean, at the first part of my career, I was mainly boxing at super welter until I had a fine championship weight and get down to welter. So, to be honest with you, I feel as though I carry the strength I'm starting to, I mean, I'm just turned 27. I'm still young in the game, but I'm starting to find a little bit
maturity, sure.
Well, I don't do this to me, man. 27 years of it. Don't be doing that on my show, Sunshine. You
know, it's got to be shared, mate. It's got to be shared. Listen, you can't turn the time back on yours, mate, but I'm trying to slow down mine, bro. I'm trying to slow down mine. Why not go up there and perform at that weight? I mean, if the opportunity comes and I'm finding 154 nice to make and squeeze down to 147 to fight them, I will. But I'm gonna build myself back in at 154 and see how it goes.
There's always going to be the relationship or the connection with Conor, obviously, at 147. Yeah. But as I look around that 154-pound division, especially domestically, mate, there's some fights there. There's some big fights that would propel you into the conversation of being on that fringe world level again.
I think potentially two, three fights and I'm back there where I need to be. I mean, I'm not seeing any names, but I was talking about certain names the other day and guys who had significant titles and I was looking thinking, I can deal with him 100%. When I'm on my A game, I had an off night against Avanesian and a lot of personal things were going on and Avanesian beat us on the night, and that's all I can say. Do you know what I mean? But, like, all the greats have had off nights, and listen, it is what it is. And a lot of personal things outside can affect that. So I'll let that one be there and sit there. And if anyone want to take strength from that, they can, but that's not me. That's not me at all. So I'm going to go into this new sort of promotional deal, this new contract, next fight, renewed, and I can't wait to just run out. Like I was saying, I'm seeing some names there and I'm like, I feel so uncomfortable to be able to beat them and carry on and be a name, like be a proper name.
Now the dust has settled, obviously, on that Avanesian fight, what are your conclusions from it? What do you take away from it?
If you were to know what was going on behind closed doors, maybe months and months and months before the fight, even probably a year before the fight, then you could only from people who's close to us, you can only you can only sort of look at it from that point of view, thinking the camp, you were in the best shape. I was in the best shape I've ever been. I was sparring multiple rounds, 15 rounds straight off. I was doing everything I needed to do to be in peak shape. It's just that the personal things let us happen to magnify on that certain week and
just the most important thing in this game is what is going on between your ears. That's the most important thing, and everything's got to be balanced at every part of your life.
Mate, you hit the nail on the head, 100%. That's it, mate. I talk to mates and friends who's like, who go, oh my god, went to work today, mate, I got back, missus done me head in, couldn't think right, went the next day, and my head was all over the gaff, and I'm like, I know that, mate, but the thing is, that wasn't what was going on with me, but I've got to go in there and I've got to perform at a high level whilst all this stuff's going on in my life, you know what I mean, or in my head or whatever. So
you've got to go and have a fight. You've got to go and have a fight with all that going on in your head, yeah.
It's a weird one, but listen, love the sport and I'm back where I need to be, mentally, physically, everything is in the right place. And I took a good few months to sort of sit there and reevaluate things and talk to people and stuff, and I've just thought, listen, I know the people who I've sparred, the quality I've mixed with, I know I can definitely be at the top of the game. I'm just getting us there and being there without the cracks of life getting in the way.
I think a moment like this, not only do you learn a lot about yourself professionally, but you also learn a lot about yourself personally.
You mature so much. I had kids and it matured as I got married, that matured as Jesus. But like this is matured as massively, do you know what I mean? On a personal level more than anything. Like I've just started to learn to listen to the people I need to listen to, and just everyone else can let the traps go as much as they want. And it doesn't really matter. Nothing really matters unless it really means, unless someone's close to you and it means something to you. I mean, there's a better person in life and in boxing, so I'm in the gym now, can't wait to get this camp on the full floor and put a performance on in December. Can't wait.
Listen, before I let you get on with your evening, what's the handicap on golf, pal? I'm watching that Instagram and I tell you something, them fairway drives are looking sharp, son.
Listen, lad, me and Adam played like a society match the other day with Wasson. We went down and played. And I said,
Adam, I'm off 16. Like, you know, I'm off 16. He went,
yeah,
right,
bandit. Said, you're a bandit, yeah, lad. There's no way you're a 16.
I went and won the day, and Adam couldn't take it. I come in the gym today, and I went, Adam, tell him who won golf. He went, he's cheating. He's losing his head. Mate, he couldn't take it, lad.
Mate, I saw you tee off, and I went, there's no way he's double figures, that lad. There's no way he's double figures. For you to pull a 16 handicap on that, you've cheated. No, you've cheated, lad.
No, I'm not. Honestly, God's honest too. One day I can play like the other day I went out on the course and shot like 9 over, and yeah. I was at 10 over.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I'm on the way to single figures here. Mm. But then the next day I went out and shot 3 double bogeys on the front nine and went 17, 18 over. And I was like, oh, that's terrible.
When are you sorting the TalkSport lads out with this award-winning takeaway as well, pal? What's going on with this?
Oh, mate, get down. Essex, anywhere in Essex, Ipswich,
yeah.
Harwich, we've got them all over. But anytime you're down,
yeah.
you need to send me a message. And the food's all on us, burgers, wings and ribs. It's all on us, bro. I can't eat much of it. I tell you what it is, I won after a fight in December.
Yeah.
But before then, bro, you can feed yourselves up as much as you want. Go down there.
What was the award that you picked up? You picked it up the last couple of weeks?
Best British Takeaway Award in South England.
Wow.
So it's mental, mate, eh? So we're doing well, mate. It got two partners, Neil and Jack, and all the staff have absolutely smashed it.
There you go. What a long one. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. You could do that via iTunes, or you could do it via our website, TalkSport.com. We'll have all the fallout on next week's show to Anthony Joshua versus Alexander Usyk, and then we'll start to look ahead towards Tyson Fury's third escapade with Deontay Wilder. Boxing is booming. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. We'll catch you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.